Welcome back. Our next case is United States v. Tate. I note again that Judge Sparks is participating on the record and that we have Senior Judge Crawford sitting as our fifth judge. Captain Teal, are you prepared to argue on behalf of the appellant?
Yes, Your Honor.
And Captain Morgan, are you prepared to argue on behalf of the government?
Yes, Your Honor.
Please proceed.
Good morning, Chief Judge Olson, Senior Judge Crawford, members of the court, and may it please the court. May I please reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal?
Granted.
I'm Captain Lauren Teal, and along with my co-counsel, Major Rachel Gordienko, we represent Staff Sergeant David Tate. A person with the initials CM presumably took the oath, testified both with relevant questions from the government and the defense, and this court has no idea what he said. No court has ever affirmed a case where an entire witness was missing to be a substantially verbatim transcript. First, the military judge erred by not calling CM as a witness. Second, the Army Court erred in finding it had jurisdiction over appellant's case. First, the military judge has a duty under RCM 1103, along with the trial counsel, to have a substantially verbatim record. Article 54 also requires a complete record so that the Army Court and this court can do their legal reviews. Article 66 specifically says that the legal and factual sufficiency at the Army Court is based on the entire record. That's not what this court has in front of it. And that's because the military judge did not call CM.
So if CM had testified the second time around, no problem.
Yes, Your Honor.
If the parties had agreed, essentially stipulated to what CM had testified the first time around, would there have been a problem?
The Army Court found in Brown-Austin that that was insufficient, but this court could obviously overrule that precedent.
What would you have a concern with that? If both parties said, okay, CM testified yesterday afternoon, we agree this is what CM testified.
Well, this court's precedent in talking about stipulations and summaries requires that, though it not be with punctuational detail, it be the same substance. So in Sturdivant, this court found that summaries were insufficient. So a stipulation very likely would have been found insufficient. But that's not even what we have in this case. The government and the military judge made no attempt to summarize what his testimony was.
So you're really saying the only solution was to have CM testify?
Or, Your Honor, as in Lashley, he could have helped fill in the blanks of what a transcript would have looked like by using the notes of the parties from the day prior. Additionally,
I'm sorry, could you flesh that out a little bit? Are you saying CM would still need to flesh it out?
CM would need to be a party to help it flesh it out, Your Honor. And in this case, it wasn't that CM wasn't available. The government proffered that he only had a work day the next day, and it was late in New York because the trial was happening in Arizona. However, they didn't even attempt to reach him, nor did they try and call him the next day when
he would have been. So what would have been different? Let's engage in the parade of imaginary horribles. Let's say that we've got death penalty case where we've got very extensive sentencing, and we have someone who discovers on day three, oh, my God, I over-recorded on day one's testimony. And that person was a witness who is an unsavory character. No one can track that person down. Would the result be what? That clearly the remedy that you're seeking in this case would not apply.
No, Your Honor. But if the witness were unavailable, then at that point they could make other attempts to recreate what had been said, not leave the appellate courts guessing as to what that person testified.
But here the accused went along with the idea of we don't want to call CM. It was not something where the accused counsel was saying we want CM back here. They didn't want him. They didn't call him as rebuttal witness. So why is that a distinction that makes a difference here?
Yes, Your Honor. First, the appellant's attorney did object to proceeding the way that the judge decided to proceed. So once that happened, and at that time, the government said they were going to recall all of the witnesses. So when there was a meeting of minds about starting anew, in the judge's terms, they were going to call all their witnesses. So at the later point, they've already objected and are merely playing by the government and the judge's rules. Additionally, the government in this case says, but what about CM's cross-examination? And if anything, they only waived his cross-examination. Additionally, it would be antithetical to the defense counsel's purposes in a trial to call a government sentencing witness to do the government's job under 1103 that both the government and the military judge have to do, as well as this court noted in Henry and Davenport that regardless of whether a defense or an accused tries to waive it, it's of jurisdictional proportion that can't be waived.
So it's your position from your brief, not from what you've stated here, that the convening authority could have cured this by ordering a rehearing?
Yes, Your Honor, by ordering a rehearing under 1103, though at that point a sentence had not yet been announced.
Now, from your brief, you're saying 1103 authorizes the convening authority to do a rehearing, but not the military judge. But 1103 doesn't prohibit, nor anything else in the code prohibits, military judge in the course of a trial, because it was still going on, from exercising their ability to create a remedy here. This judge was citing to the concept of judicial weights. Why was that mistaken? And the key here is that the trial, the court-martial was not yet over.
A judicially created remedy, especially one that's applied improperly in this case, does not overcome the plain language of Congress and the President in both Article 54, Article 66, and RCM 1103. This judicially created remedy was the word of a trial judge cited in a plurality opinion, Platt, that then has taken on a talisman for this government's position that it can essentially throw away any proceeding as long as it's named starting anew. But that's not even what happened in Platt. In Platt, the witnesses all retestified, and the court specifically stated from the trial court that though it wasn't done with punctuational detail, the same substance was on the record. And we see from Davenport's definitions of omissions that an entire witness cannot be a punctuational detail. He presumably did something that was found relevant in the first proceeding. So not testifying in the second can't be as if a comma or a sigh or a period were omitted. So the military judge could have recalled CM the next day. They clearly had the defense proceedings, all of their witnesses, the next day. And other than the unsworn statement, this was the government's last witness. It was within this judge's opportunity and realm of options to simply call CM the next day.
Counsel, implicit in everything you've said and explicit in your brief is the argument that this starting anew theory is completely unmoored in any part of the code or in the rules, and therefore it's impermissible. Right? I think that's your position. Is that correct?
It's not that the entirety is impermissible, but when it's done correctly, i.e. getting the substance back on the record.
That's not starting. I mean, that's recreation, right? Do you think starting anew, where we wipe out everything that happened before, and I agree with you that this may or may not have been done properly, but let's assume that you started anew, you wiped out everything, you completely forgot it, and you just started over. Is it your argument that even if it was done correctly, would be impermissible?
We would concede that that could be permissible if the judge started anew and it was tied to the prior proceeding.
Tied to the prior proceeding. I thought we just agreed that we were going to forget entirely, wipe from our minds the prior proceeding, and start over. Whatever witnesses anybody wants to call, whatever cross-examination wants to happen, we're going to completely forget what happened, and we're going to start over. Is that a permissible way to deal with these kind of problems in sentencing?
No, Your Honor, because it doesn't create a complete transcript of what conspired before. So McFadden and Diaz talk about the ability for judges and fact finders to set aside facts, and it's impossible for the appellate courts to do their appellate review of whether or not those judges or panels could set aside those facts.
Okay, so I'm troubled, as you are, that there seems to be there's nothing that we can moor this starting a new theory to. But then I look at Rule 915A, and I look at the last sentence, and it says, a mistrial may be declared, and I'm going to skip some language, as to only the proceedings after findings. So that sounds to me, and maybe I'm wrong, that if there was some kind of problem during sentencing, after findings, that the military judge would have it in his discretion under 915 to declare a mistrial only as to all proceedings after findings, and then start over, which seems awfully similar to the starting a new theory. Now, I agree with you. Nobody ever cites this language, which is a mystery to me, when they talk about the starting a new theory. But it seems like Rule 915A expressly authorizes this starting a new procedure if it is, in fact, done correctly and actually starting new.
Your Honor, I think using that rule, it can be done. However, I'm still troubled by the Article 54 language and Article 66 language that requires a complete and entire record. So even if the prior proceedings are...
Well, what does it mean then? What would it mean to declare a mistrial as to the sentencing phase or the post-finding phase of the court-martial, other than that we throw out everything that happened and we start over?
Yes, Your Honor. So that's what happened in Platt. And at least from that piece of case law, we see that though it was not with punctuational detail, and they did start over, Your Honor, they did get essentially what was done in the unrecorded session back. So this.
But why would that matter, right? Like when we declare a mistrial, we throw out everything and we start over, right? And that's what Rule 915 is talking about. If it says you can do that just for sentencing, which I think makes some kind of sense because why would you touch the findings? Why does it matter? Why does anything that happened in what we have now thrown out matter?
Your Honor, because it still requires under Article 54 and Article 66 that there be a complete and entire record. And even though they can declare a mistrial, Your Honor, that does not satisfy the other requirements of the code that all of the court-martial be before this court and the Army Court for its review.
So even if you have a loss of the recording, even if you can't reconstruct it, there's no way you can't throw all that out and start over? That's your position?
Yes, Your Honor, because as McFadden and Diaz say, this court cannot grade the trial court's homework if that homework is never submitted. Every case that comes
before... But why would any of what happened before be legally relevant?
Yes, Your Honor. It would be relevant because those are things that are in the mind of the fact finder, regardless of whether or not he can disregard them.
But don't we do that all the time in the law? I get it. It's a fiction. But we instruct jurors, you heard this impermissible testimony. Don't consider that, right? This is something that is probably troublesome to a lot of people, but we do it all the time. Why couldn't we do it here?
But this court also reverses cases all the time because the military judge got it wrong, and it's unable to make the decision whether or not omitting CM's testimony and whatever happened at the mistrial was an impermissible use of the law. The appellate courts cannot do
that. But that comes back to like prejudice and what actually happened. But you seem to be saying like this whole procedure just can't happen. We just can't do it this way. There's no authority for it. There's no way to forget the testimony that we're going to throw out.
This court has held in Gray and Sturdivant that unrecorded pieces of trial, whatever they be a sidebar or challenging panel members, must be put on the record under RCM 1103.
If you're not going to declare a mistrial.
If you're not going to declare a mistrial, but even with those reconstructions, so in Sturdivant they put summaries on the record, the mistrial by itself wouldn't cure the defect. And if it did cure the defect, it would be a mistrial and then an authorized rehearing. Perhaps I'm not understanding your question.
No, it's okay. I've taken up too much of your time.
So with regards to what the actual court did here was not done in any other precedent by this court or the Army Court in reconstructing a different proceeding separate than the first proceeding. Second, in Davenport and Henry, this court found that not having a verbatim transcript is of jurisdictional proportion and can't be waived. So whether or not the defense counsel participates or object is not actually relevant. And in this case, the defense counsel did not agree with the judge when he decided to go this way, and he objected. The Army Court erred in finding that there is a substantially verbatim transcript based on this judicially created remedy, though tied in RCM 915, that still doesn't meet the congressional intent and the plain language of Article 54 and Article 66.
Counsel, does United States versus Stauffer have any relevance here? Are you familiar with that case?
Yes, Your Honor. As the government concedes in their brief with Stauffer, it makes the omissions in this case, or omissions generally of sentencing exhibits, to be a qualitative omission, not just a quantitative omission as defined by Lashley.
That was a sentencing case, so there's no issue of prejudice on the findings.
Yes, Your Honor. And so that is directly applicable here. So the just mere sentencing exhibits, which create an incomplete transcript, were found to be prejudicial in that case. But also in Boxdale, the presumption of prejudice would apply here as well, should this court find that it's not a jurisdictional issue.
Now, I think your argument here is that it is jurisdictional error,
yes,
which cannot be waived.
Yes, Your Honor.
So in your brief, in terms of a remedy, you say the appropriate action is to set aside all but 6 months of the sentence and disapprove appellant's bad conduct discharge. Why shouldn't this court instead just set aside the sentence and send it back for rehearing if we were to agree with your substantive argument?
We agree with that, too. Our position has changed since the brief, that the correct position would be to set aside the sentence and send it back. Though it's of jurisdictional proportion, Davenport does dictate that the convening authority must take action, and it's prohibited from doing so by Article 60. So as the Army Court did in U.S. versus Steele, it is required that there must be the sentence must be set aside when there's an Article 60 conflict with RCM 1103.
Well, could we send it back to the convening authority and let the convening authority decide whether or not to authorize a rehearing? Is that another option?
Yes, Your Honor. He's prohibited from setting aside the sentence, as this court knows, under Article 60, because the sentence was 22 months in a bad conduct discharge, which is outside of his limits to act on.
It was a rather serious assault.
Yes, Your Honor. Based on these reasons, we request that this court reverse the Army Court. Thank you.
Reverse the Army Court and set aside the sentence?
Yes, Your Honor.
And do we give any further instruction to the CCA? What should our decretal paragraph say if you prevail?
Yes, Your Honor. This court reverses the Army Court's decision and remands to set aside the sentence. Either this court could set aside the sentence or order the Army Court to for further compliance with RCM 1103F.
Any further questions? Thank you. Captain Morgan.
Chief Judge Olson, Senior Judge Crawford, members of the court, may it please the court. My name is Captain Dustin Morgan, and I, along with Major Pamela Jones, represent the United States of America. This court should affirm the findings of the Army Court because the transcript in this case is substantially verbatim. The transcript in this case is substantially verbatim for two separate and distinct reasons. The first is that this transcript presents a complete record of proceedings as is fundamentally required by Article 54. And second, when the military judge started the proceedings anew, he cured the recording error and thereby created a substantially verbatim record. As the defense just concluded on, even if this court finds that this transcript is not substantially verbatim, the remedy that they originally sought in their brief is inapplicable because RCM 1103F does not yet apply, because the defense has not shown that a substantially verbatim transcript cannot be prepared. So starting with Article 54 and why this is a complete record of proceedings as is required, the military judge time and time again made clear that he would not consider any of the proceedings that occurred on September 18, 2018, the date in which the recording error occurred. So what we have and what this court has before it is a complete and accurate transcript of every consideration that the military judge took during the pre-sentencing proceedings. He has the three witnesses that the government called during the RCM 1001 proceedings. He has the 13 exhibits they introduced. He has the unsworn testimony and the witnesses that the defense called. That is what encompassed his sentencing decision, and it constitutes a complete record of proceedings as is required by Article 54. We have every single consideration that he took when adjudging 22 months of bad conduct discharge and a reduction to E3 for appellant in this case.
Is that really true? I mean, didn't he specifically say on the record that based on things he heard during the proceedings that had been wiped out, that was going to influence or color what he did in the new restarted proceeding?
Your Honor, it goes back to the question that you were asking defense counsel earlier. It's this legal fiction that we talk about. When we have a fact finder hear evidence that they weren't supposed to and then are asked to ignore it. The military judge cited what happened on September 18th to clarify what he would not consider. Time and time again in the joint appendix, at 86, at 102, at 109, at 156 through 157, he did reference what happened on September 18th. He did.
But I mean, that sort of violates the fiction, right? We're all supposed to pretend that we've washed from our minds what we've now thrown out, but he's expressly on the record seeming to suggest that that's not what he's doing.
Your Honor, it's only to clarify what he truly is considering. It's as if an MRE 413 or 414 hearing happened outside the presence of the members, and he's referencing back to prior proceedings to explain what the correct picture is, what is to be considered when making the appropriate sentencing decision. It's just merely to reference what he will not consider and properly frame what he will. The several times that he referenced it was to correct what the witnesses testified to the following day. Is when they testified to surplus things they didn't testify to the day before. I will not consider anything extra. I'm only going to consider what matches what happened the day before.
Well, that doesn't sound like starting anew, right? That sounds like reconstruction. So if he said he was starting anew, that's one thing. But here it sounds like he's trying to reconstruct the testimony that was lost. So what is he doing?
He's starting anew, Your Honor. He is very clear on that. He says it time and time again in the record that he is to wash out the entire proceedings that's happened the day before and start anew.
Then what basis is there to say not consider things that people testified to the second time that they didn't testify to the first time?
What basis would there be, Your Honor? Yes. I think it's just to provide a fair sentencing procedure for the accused. It was to clarify for him and for counsel that he was not going to consider anything inappropriate. We see military judges do that time and time again before they announce findings or sentence. They'll say, I did not consider anything improperly before me. It's just to clarify that picture, Your Honor.
But it seems like he had two choices, at least under this. If we agree that starting anew is a legitimate choice. He could start over or he could reconstruct. But it seems like he's trying to do both. And I'm not sure how we're fair to the accused. Starting over is arguably fair to the accused, and reconstructing is arguably fair to the accused. But mixing and matching the two, I'm sure the other counsel is going to go up and say, is that's exactly what you can't do, because we're a reviewing court. We don't know we have no idea what was said on the first day. We can't fairly review whether there was an error, whether he's being true in his characterization of what was said the first day. I'm sure they're going to have all kinds of objections to this. What is your answer to those objections?
Your Honor, it only would have been unfair had he not taken those curative instructions and curative steps that he took in the record to ensure that he was not considering it. Then we wouldn't have a complete record because he would have considered things before for sentencing purposes. He's merely creating a correct picture through which to make that sentencing determination and judge a sentence to appellant. It's why MRE 105 exists, Your Honor. It's why the military judge must instruct panel members and must instruct themselves inherently when something improperly goes before them. We have that ability to make curative instructions if something gets improperly before the fact finder, which it did in this case because of the recording error.
In regard to the discussion section, I do want to emphasize it's discussion, so it's not binding. It's RCM 1103B2B2, where it says, quote, the verbatim transcript includes matter which the military judge orders stricken from the record or disregarded. Now, the MJ is saying here, essentially, I'm disregarding this. Is that a problem for the government or not?
Your Honor, it's not, because it's as if those proceedings didn't exist. And, again, it is a legal fiction, going back to what we were discussing earlier. It's as if a pleading was put before the court improperly or was something the judge mistakenly saw and didn't get to consider later.
But the problem is, as Judge Hardy was talking about, is instead of the military judge the second time around simply he used the word wash from his mind. He says in the second proceeding, I'm disregarding this. So that's why I'm looking at the discussion section, not binding, but says if there are matters disregarded, then that are not there, then you don't have a verbatim record.
Yes, Your Honor. My first point would be, as you pointed out, it's not binding. And secondly, we do have somewhat of a reconstruction of what occurred that day. It's how we know and how I can characterize what happened. Four witnesses were called for the government. 14 prosecution exhibits were offered. The victim gave an unsworn statement. The defense called their first witness. So this court has before them what was put in front of the judge. We have the general picture of what occurred during there. So it does meet the mandates or the guidance that the discussion section to RCM 1103b2b provides, Your Honor. So it is captured, not in a completely verbatim way, but that is not what the rules require. So the question that this court asked defense counsel on whether it needs to be completely verbatim and whether a stipulation would have sufficed in this term, I think the case law does support that proposition. The defense cites Boxdale and Brown Austin for the proposition that it wouldn't. It was only because the defense didn't agree there. The law does not require strict and complete adherence to what exactly happened during the course of the trial. It doesn't require complete accuracy. It doesn't require actual verbatim transcript. It's why RCM 1103 says substantially verbatim. And this court's precedence clarifies that it does not need to be 100% accurate. So what we do have does paint enough of a picture for what the judge disregarded on September 18, 2018, Your Honor. Moving next to the judge's remedy here, the starting anew. The judge.
Before you go there, so I ask this question of appellant's counsel. What are we to make of the fact that trial defense counsel did not seek to have CM testify?
It is a way that they could have cured the issue along with several other steps that defense counsel could have taken along the process of this. The defense could have cured this defect by calling Mr. CM and testifying, and testifying in a manner that substantially matched the way he did the day before, something that they complain of now. They also had the opportunity to withdraw from the guilty plea. The judge gave them that opportunity on the record. He asked the appellant directly on the record, do you wish to withdraw from the guilty plea after professing this directed course of conduct, after saying, I'm going to wash away the proceedings that happened the day before and start anew. He gave appellant that opportunity. And third, appellant could have asked for a mistrial under RCM 915. They could have, but they jumped to the remedy under RCM 1103F.
Counsel, on that point, and maybe I didn't understand, but it sounded like appellant was saying that there would still be a problem with 915 and asking for a mistrial because we wouldn't have had a record of the sentencing proceedings that went ahead before the 915 motion was asked for. Do you agree that if there's no recording, that you can't get rid of the requirement of verbatim transcript of the trial by saying we're having 915, we're doing sentencing over, because we don't have a verbatim transcript of what happened before?
The government does not agree with that proposition, Your Honor, and that would not accord with the strict reading of Article 54 and the Article 66 review that the criminal court, the CCA, would have undertook. All it needs is what constituted the decision the court currently made. A mistrial does, in fact, wash away those previous proceedings, and it plays no role in the future proceedings going forward.
Would this have been an appropriate case for a mistrial?
Yes, Your Honor, it would have had appellant asked for it. But again, appellant jumped to the remedy under RCM 1103F without asking for that remedy. The military judge...
Was it an error, and not preserved, because they didn't ask for it, but was it an error not to ask for a mistrial or not to grant a mistrial in this case?
On the part of the military judge, Your Honor?
Well, either on the part of the military judge or ineffective assistance. Again, we're speaking completely hypothetically here. I'm just asking for I'm trying to understand the options that were available.
Yes, Your Honor. The case law on mistrial is very clear. It is a remedy of last resort. It's a drastic remedy, one to only be undertaken if every other option is undertook and it is not plausible. Here, the military judge derived his authority to do what he did under RCM 801A as the presiding officer of the court-martial, and the case law that he cited, United States versus Griffin, an Army case, provides the exact avenue that the military judge took in this position. It is a case from 1983, but it does lay out that the appropriate remedy when a recording error occurs is to start anew. So it was an option for the military judge to give a mistrial, Your Honor, but it was an error for him to do so. It definitely was not an abuse of discretion, and it definitely was not necessary given the drastic nature of a mistrial and the other options available to him, mainly starting anew under United States versus Griffin. This case is significantly different than what was presented in the United States versus Davenport. That was a case where a merits witness was unable to recall testimony over 4 years after giving his initial testimony against the appellant in that case, and during a Dubay hearing, just unable to call specific details. Here, the military judge started anew less than 24 hours after the original witnesses were called. They were in the best opportunity to give the evidence that they gave the day before. They were in the best position to make sure that we have a complete and substantial verbatim transcript, as is required by Article 54 and by RCM 1103. When a military judge is left with these type of choices, he or she needs to be able to take a remedy that is both judicially efficient, fair to the appellant, fair to any accused, and is able to ensure the due administration of justice.
Counsel, putting aside how it was executed, would there have been any procedural difference between, let's assume I'm right about Rule 915 and you can clear up post-findings mistrial, would there have been any procedural difference between that, whatever that thing is, which no one's ever seen, I don't think, and the starting a new process that was executed here?
There would have been, Your Honor. There would have been a few additional steps that needed to have been undertaken had the military judge declared a mistrial in this case.
Is it a problem if we're going to rely on Rule 915 for the authority for the starting a new process? Is there a problem that those procedural steps weren't?
Your Honor, admittedly, if you were to say a mistrial were appropriate here, that only the General Court Martial Convening Authority can direct a rehearing after it being sent back to him or her. So the military judge did skip a step in the mistrial analysis. But what he did here is take out all that step and all that energy and ensure that the witnesses that were able to testify that day could testify anew. He did essentially what would have happened under RCM 915, Your Honor.
And we would need to rely on 801 and just his general authority.
Yes, Your Honor. 801 read in conjunction with United States versus Griffin, United States versus Platt. This court's decision, United States versus Gaskins, I know that applied to post-trial, but if a CCA is able to fix the record for post-trial purposes and on appeal purposes, the military judge has to derive that ability during the trial itself, inherently in that power in 801A. There has to be something the military judge can be able to do given this procedural problem. Turning finally to the remedy that appellant asked for, government agrees that the remedy under 1103F, as they asked for it in their brief, is inappropriate. That is only appropriate if the substantially verbatim transcript truly cannot be created. The remedy suggested by defense is what the government would argue for as well if this court finds the transcript to be not substantially verbatim. Set aside the sentence, send it back to the General Court Martial Convening Authority, and he can direct a rehearing on sentence so we can get that to this court and to the CCA and have a substantially verbatim transcript. Pending any questions, this court should affirm the findings of the Army Court because the record is substantially verbatim. Thank you.
Captain Teal.
The congressionally mandated rules under Article 54 and Article 66 override the presidentially promulgated rules of 915 and 1103, even given that 1103 specifically states that there must be a verbatim transcript, not even a substantially verbatim transcript. That's read in by case law. There is not a verbatim transcript in this case. And as the government said, the general picture is there, and it's not completely verbatim. That means that 1103 is not met. Additionally, in Griffin, a case that they heavily rely on in starting anew, it specifically says, we are convinced that calling the witness to testify again provided a substantially verbatim transcript. Declaration of a mistrial in that case obviate the benefits of the witness's courtroom experience since she would still be required to testify again. Even on the government's strongest case about starting anew, Platt and Griffin, the witnesses still testified again, which is not what happened in this case. With regards to the commentary about the judge disregarding things, Jenks Act violations, motions to suppress, 802s, all of these things are put on the record. Loud noises in the courtroom, gestures. The appellate court in Article 66 is in a distinct position to do a factual and legal sufficiency review based on the entirety of the record. and the entirety of their record is not what was presented to the Army Court, nor is it present at this court. This court can simply not disregard the trial court's lack of calling him, CM, as well as the fact that the military judge in that case was not even disregarding CM's and the prior other people's testimony because he kept referencing back to it, even though he said he threw away his notes inconsistent with Lashley. He was clearly referring back to it.
Counsel, can we go back to the start of your what you just said? Are you suggesting that that we cannot find that it's substantially verbatim, it has to be actually verbatim, and do we have to overrule our previous cases that said substantially verbatim is the test?
No, Your Honor. However, at the point where the government is saying the general picture is there, that doesn't even meet the substantially verbatim test, and they specifically misquoted the rule, which says verbatim. Not that the prior testimony could, not that the prior precedent should be overturned because of stare decisis, as well as the fact that it's impossible to get word for word in the same words in every instance of a court-martial. That's not what we're asking for. What we are asking for is the substance, though not with punctuational detail, of CM's testimony should have been on the record, even if the judge was going to disregard it in his sentencing decision, Your Honor.
And what is the relevance of the defense, trial defense counsel's conduct and acquiescence in not having CM testify?
Your Honor, I see my time has expired.
Please answer the question.
First, Your Honor, this is of jurisdictional proportion and can't be waived. Second, they objected to the proceedings overall. Third, it would be antithetical to do the government's job under RCM 1103 and the military judge's job under 1103 for them, as well as the fact that they merely stated they would not be doing their cross-examination again. Not that they were waiving a substantially verbatim transcript or that the military judge and trial counsel still didn't have a duty to put an offer of proof on the record the next day. Thank you. Any further questions?
Thank you. The case is now submitted. The court thanks counsel for both sides. The court will stand in recess until further order of the court.